Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the PBT Podcast. I am Dominic Ridgard of NBCSports.com, and joining me is Kurt Hanlon, the managing editor of ProBasketballTalk.com. How are you, Kurt?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Morning, Kurt. And also joining us is Brett Polakoff from ProBasketballTalk.com as well. How are you, Brett?
Good, guys. What is going on?
Not much. We're taping this on a Monday morning, a couple of days before the finals, so we're going to dive deep into the Warriors-Cavaliers matchup. But first, a couple coaching vacancies were filled over the weekend. First up, Alvin Gentry was tabbed as the next head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans, and he seemed like a consensus pick around analysts who were asked who they think would be the best coach for that spot. Kurt, what do you think of the hire?
Yeah, I like it. I think, look, I think there's a couple one question I have is really, look, he's not a defensive mind necessarily. He's not a guy known for that end of the floor, and that was an end where they were bottom 10. That was their biggest issue. So I need to see him show that he can do that. Now, that said, you know, he was the lead assistant on the Clippers two seasons ago. That was a good defensive team. He was a lead assistant on the Warriors this year. They were the number one defensive team in the league, so maybe he's learned something. He brings in a lead assistant who's kind of defensive-minded, and this goes well. On top of that, though, look, the things you heard out of the interview that he went in and basically told them, you're playing too slow, which is so true. I mean, look, if you have Anthony Davis on the team and you're 27th in pace, you're not doing it right. And B, you're underutilizing him, which is something everybody complained about. I mean, how often did he – not just, like, they go away from him in the fourth quarter, which was, you know, Tyreek Evans just pounding the ball. But it was, like, how often did they just not get him ball until, we're, like, 18 seconds into the shot clock? So, hopefully I think they can be a lot better with him. And, frankly, that's a team that should just be better if the players are healthy.
Well, we talked about this last week, you know, with Monty Williams. We were speculating about Tom Thibodeau and – whether or not he'd be, you know, a decent fit. I think going in the direction of getting Gentry in there is a big change from Monty Williams, who, you know, theoretically is a defensive-minded coach, even though the results, we weren't seeing those last season. You know, Gentry is offense first. There's no question about it. Despite the Warriors being, you know, the top defensive team in the league this year, Gentry's the offensive coordinator of that team. Ron Adams, the other assistant under Steve Kerr, he's the guy that runs the defense. You know, I covered Alvin Gentry his entire coaching tenure when he was head coach of the Phoenix Suns. I was living in Phoenix at the time. Gentry's offensive-minded. He what he does is he says, we need to get stops sometimes, you know, late in games when it's tight. But, you know, he's more concerned about outscoring, you know, the other team. So that'll be a nice change. And I think with his talent on the Pelicans roster, he'll be able to affect some positive things. And look, you know, we talked about this as well. Just him being healthy next season,
yeah.
You know, they're going to make a little bit of a jump. You add in, you know, an offensive-minded guy, you know, who could even further unleash Anthony Davis if that's even possible. And I like the hire. I think it's good. You know, Gentry's a player's coach, but he's not afraid to get after guys and tear into them, and he tends to earn the respect of the guys in the locker room. So I think it was a good decision by New Orleans.
Yeah, I like the hire as well. One thing that always kind of worries me about filling coaching vacancies is this, the kind of retread hires, you know, like a Larry Drew or Mike Woodson. It always kind of gives me pause. And then when Alvin Gentry's name came up, I remember his Phoenix years, and I actually thought he did a really good job in Phoenix. He took him to the conference finals, I believe the Nash Amari. Last year of that tandem, and they actually gave the Lakers a real competitive series in one of their championship years. But this is going to be Gentry's, I think, fifth head coaching stop, which kind of shocked me. I didn't realize he had been a head coach that many times. But I do like the hire. I think he's going to do great in New Orleans, and he's got a foundational piece in Anthony Davis, which is big. The other hire that I don't believe is fully official yet, but it sounds like it's pretty much set in stone. The Bulls were reportedly in contract negotiations with Fred Hoiberg. It sounds like they're working on a 5-year deal after they shoved Thibs out the door, to put it gently. What do you guys think about them dipping down to the coaching ranks and tabbing Hoiberg as their next head coach?
Well, you know, Hoiberg's been a guy. I mean, it's not just the Bulls. I will say this, that there's a lot of teams who have thought, I mean, he was on the radar and teams wanted him in Minnesota a few years back and other places. He's a guy that's been on a lot of GM's radar as both in terms of style and because he, look, not only was he play in the NBA, remember, he was in the Minnesota front office for years, so it was a, he was a guy tabbed as ready to make the leap. But, man, talk about walking into the pressure cooker, because it's just, I'm not going to pretend to know a ton about Fred Hoiberg's coaching style, but this is a guy who was the mayor of Ames, Iowa. I mean, he owned that city. He grew up there, played there, did all this, and came back and turned that program into, you know, a really good program at the college level, and again, did it in Ames, Iowa. Now you're leaving that for a fishbowl. I mean, it's going to be different. You walk in the door in Chicago, and a third of the city's going to want you fired. Like, there's not going to be much of a honeymoon. So it's going to be to me, as much as a test of Hoiberg, this is a real gamble slash statement on the Garpacks GM front office over there. Look, you got rid of the known quantity and brought in the unknown quantity. So this, if it doesn't work, some of this has got to be on them.
No, absolutely. And, you know, the reason, obviously, that they got rid of Thibodeau, they were very blunt in their press release, right? I mean, they said he basically doesn't get along with us. He doesn't listen to he doesn't take our suggestions seriously. He shuts us out of the process. So you bring in a guy in Fred Hoiberg, who's basically a longtime personal friend of Gar Foreman's. I mean, Foreman bought Fred Hoiberg's house when Hoiberg left the Bulls to play for the Timberwolves. So, you know, this is a long-term relationship. He's been their guy all along, despite the nonsense they spewed at the press conference about, you know, beginning a wide-ranging coaching search, which, by the way, anytime a front office does that is complete nonsense. Oklahoma City did the same thing in the podcast before Billy Donovan when they fired Scott Brooks, and then, you know, a week later the guy's hired. You know, you can't really, and they didn't interview anybody else. So I'm not sure why front offices, you know, are afraid to just let us know, hey, I have my guy. He's the guy that's been there all along. But as far as Hoiberg goes, you know, obviously, you know, Kurt and I are focused on the NBA all season. We don't spend a ton of time following college hoops until right before the draft, and we, you know, study up and kind of do our research. You know, but everything I'm hearing about Hoiberg is that he's very similar to Brad Stevens. You know, he's had success in his short time with the Celtics. You know, Hoiberg is a mellow guy, not a lot of ego, good with X's and O's, and good with player motivation. So that'll be a nice change from Thibodeau's intensity. And, you know, the pressure's on for everybody in Chicago. You know, they're going to be expected, you know, to get back to the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, potentially make a run at the NBA Finals with that roster if they're healthy. So it's an interesting hire. It's a personal hire for Gar Foreman, and the pressure's going to be on from the very beginning of next season.
Yeah, I agree with you both. And I think with Hoiberg, you know, a lot of NBA fans, it's not necessarily like what he – I guess this process is not necessarily what he's going to do as a coach right now, because, you know, like you guys said, we've been so focused on the NBA, it's kind of hard to dip into that, into how he coaches his Iowa teams. But it's more about how he was hired and how Thibs was fired. That really kind of made this such a headline story. I also believe that, you know, this is going to be a huge litmus test for college coaches making the jump to the NBA. You know, that was kind of shunned or frowned upon, thinking that those guys really aren't ready to handle like an NBA locker room. But Brad Stevens is doing a great job in Boston, and with Billy Donovan inheriting a really good roster and Fred Hoiberg potentially inheriting a really good roster, you know, it's not official yet, but, you know, like we've been saying, it seems like it's any day now. You know, if they have immediate success, we could see more college coaches kind of be brought up into the NBA. So now,
do we have to get more John Calipari rumors, really? Like, isn't he already rumored for every job? Do we need more of that?
Right, seriously? Wasn't he supposed to be the head coach of, like, four different NBA teams by now?
Exactly.
So let's dive into the reason we're here, the NBA Finals matchup. And I think first we need to kind of look at how both teams got here, how both teams got to the finals. The postseason win-loss for both teams is very impressive. Cleveland only lost twice. Golden State only lost three times. But at least for me, you know, I don't feel like either team was really fully challenged on their way to the NBA Finals. The conference finals was a breeze for both teams. Brett, what do you think about Cleveland's run to the finals? Do you think that I'm kind of not giving them enough credit for how dominant they were?
You know, a little bit. Obviously, the series against the Atlanta Hawks, the Hawks were, you know, decimated by injuries, especially once Damari Carroll, you know, hurt his knee in game one. He was really never the same. But what's been impressing me about the Cavaliers is that the way that they've been able to adjust, you know, from a lineup standpoint, you know, Kevin Love lost in the first round with that injury for the rest of the postseason. J.R. Smith, two-game suspension. So what happens is you get two different starters now in the Cavaliers starting lineup than they began the playoffs with. You know, Iman Shumpert now starts, and they bring J.R. Smith off the bench, and Tristan Thompson now starts where Kevin Love was getting the bulk of those minutes. And both those guys have been excellent. They've been outstanding, you know, and the Cavaliers have been able to make it work, adjusting on the fly. And honestly, I think they're playing, you know, the best basketball of the season right now, you know, with this new lineup in place. I think the Cavaliers were tested a little bit against the Chicago Bulls. That last game was a blowout, but that was a pretty competitive series.
For sure.
And I think the Cavaliers showed me something there. You know, the Warriors, obviously, they faced a little bit of adversity. They were down 2-1 to the Memphis Grizzlies. Nobody thought the Grizzlies were going to win even at that point because Memphis doesn't have enough offense, you know, to match the Golden State Warriors over a 7-game series. But the fact is, the Warriors faced a little bit of adversity and got through it. So I think you're right. I would have liked to see Golden State have to go through either the Clippers or the Spurs. I think we all feel that those were maybe the two second-best teams behind Golden State in the Western Conference. Golden State was fortunate. You know, they didn't have to play either one of those teams. You know, they beat who was in front of them. And, look, the Warriors have been the best team in the league all season long, so it's not a surprise to see them in the finals. But I think you're right. Maybe the Cavaliers and the Warriors weren't exactly tested by fire this postseason.
Yeah, you know, though, I will say this. I think it really comes down to how, in Cleveland's case, because I think you're right about the Warriors. They avoided the two toughest teams. They got fortunate there. They took care of what was in front of them fairly well. But in the Cavaliers' case, it really, because, look, the Celtics, come on, really? They made the playoffs, but, you know, that's not a playoff team in the traditional sense. And like you said, Brett, the Hawks were banged up. But how good was Chicago? Because to me, that's still a Bulls team that, you know, as we've had, you know, as the coaching shift has gone on over there, that wasn't a team that defended for him and played that as hard and as gritty for him this season as it had in the past. And Pau Gasol was out for a chunk of that series. I mean, they were missing an offensive weapon. So, to me, that's one of the hardest things about this. You know, while Golden State wasn't as tested as much as I'd like, they did come out of the West. They did, you know, they did have to beat a couple of 50-win teams to get here. That wasn't a, you know, the Hawks they ended up facing wasn't the 60-win Hawks, and I don't know how much, I just don't know yet how good Cleveland is. I will say, though, Brett's spot on about how they've adjusted, and with those adjustments, their defense has gotten better, and that's, I think, the reason they're here. I mean, Tristan Thompson, well, you know, Dom and Brett, you guys both bring more defense than Kevin Love most nights. but I mean, Tristan Thompson's brought defense. Iman Shumpert gives them an interesting defensive matchup going into this series, too, where they, you know, they're going to need that against that Golden State backcourt. So they've played better. I think it's hard for me to read how much better, how good they really are, but we're going to find out pretty quickly.
Yeah, and Brett said something that I agree with the Warriors when he said that Memphis took that 2-1 lead, but you never felt like they were going to lose, you know? And that's kind of what I meant by, like, they never seemed truly challenged, at least from the Warriors' side, is I never once felt like they were in any danger of losing a series. Now, you know, they were down 2-1. I give them credit. Their coaching staff made a great adjustment on defense. And they found a way to win that series, which is, you know, you don't apologize for winning, especially in the playoffs. But I agree. I never really felt like they were in any danger of losing. Now, in Cleveland's case, they were down 2-1, and it was a tie game with the last shot in game four. So, you know, I think another thing that gets lost in some of these series is how quickly they can turn. And that could have been down 3-1 easily. And then, you know, it could essentially be series over. But, you know, LeBron hits that shot. They go 2-2. And then they win the next two games. So I think that even though for me, I think Chicago gave – I actually felt at a certain point in that series, you know, before the Pau Gasol injury that they could win that. They could win that series. But I think that their lack of offense ultimately did them in. With the Warriors, I guess I can ask this question. Is it, you know, the West was built up as the Big Bad Conference, and it was. But like you said, they were the best team all year. So is it an indictment on them that they weren't challenged, or is that more of just a product of how good they were and how they carried that over through the postseason?
You know, to me, I don't think it's much of an indictment of the West. I look, Houston won 56 games, and they were the 2 seed by virtue of the, you know, the division thing, which was, you know, we've gotten into before, but, you know, they did win their division, so they got the seed. All that said, you know, what I think makes Golden State so dangerous, and frankly dangerous in the series, and you kind of touched on it briefly, is you know, he's like, you were like, well, then they made their defensive adjustments. Well, that's kind of happened in every one of these series. Like, there's like a game or two of the, you know, the first rounds of a boxing match where they're just kind of feeling each other out, and then Steve Kerr makes his adjustments and starts really checking, and he's got so much versatility with that roster, so much depth, and so many ways he can throw things at you that once he makes those, he hasn't. I think what's been different is because he didn't have to play the Spurs, who have that kind of depth and versatility too. He never had to play a team that could counter it. Like you made your adjustments to what Memphis did, and Memphis doesn't have the pieces on the chessboard to match it. They can win one way. Houston is sort of the same way, especially banged up without Beverly and without Monta Ellis. They just don't have the ability to make the same adjustments.
The thing with the Warriors is that they've been so good all season long. They've just been crushing their opponents. Now, I don't like the point differential statistic because I think from a logic standpoint, it just doesn't make any sense that if you beat your opponents by an average of, you know, 20 plus points a game or whatever all season long, that makes you somehow better than a team that beat opponents by an average of 10 points a game. Like what, because you're playing the Sacramento Kings and DeMarcus Cousins didn't play, you know, that all of a sudden because you blew them out, that makes you a good team. You know, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. However, historically speaking, point differential has been a strong indicator of, you know, how a team would fare in the postseason. And so it doesn't matter who the Warriors played in the playoffs. The fact is, all year long, they've been rolling people. And I think that's what's been most impressive about this Warriors team is just the level of consistency that they've been able to play with.
Definitely. And so one of the things that everybody kind of looks for on a championship team is, do you have a guy who can be the best player on the court on any given night? And luckily for us as NBA fans, both these teams have guys that absolutely slam dunk that conversation home. So, you know, this year's MVP, Steph Curry, against the four-time MVP LeBron, which is the matchup everybody's going to be watching, even though they're not going to go. Well, we're not sure. LeBron may check Curry at some point, but for the most part, we don't anticipate them guarding one another too often. So now it's hard to envision LeBron not being like kind of just step on the floor the best guy, but he has had his share of efficiency struggles this postseason, and Steph's been hot. And for me, I think Golden State has a lot more guys that they can throw at LeBron. Who do you think is going to have the upper hand as far as, you know, step on the court, best player, game in and game out?
Yeah, to me, it's still LeBron. He is still the best player in the game. I mean, look, this is, and I wrote in depth this morning a little bit at PBT on Curry versus LeBron, not in a, like you said, not in a matchup sentence because they're not going to go head-to-head, but in a, look, these are the two most, ABC's got to be thrilled, these are the two most popular players in the league. These are 1 and 2 in jersey sales, 1 and 2 in all-star voting this year. I mean, these are the guys everybody kind of wants to see. This is the guy, you know, Curry is, you know, I have, shockingly, a ton of basketball on in my house over the course of the season. And my wife, who, look, was a statistician on her college basketball team, likes basketball, about, you know, start of the playoffs, we're watching one of the Warriors games, and she goes, Curry is just fun to watch. And, you know, he is. And it's you know, it's the casual fan response that I think that's going to be a fun part of this. But at the end of the day, LeBron brings way more defense. I mean, Curry's defense has improved. He was, I think, fourth in the league in steals this year. But he does not bring the, I'm LeBron, and if I want to shut you down, you're in trouble type of mode. And that's one of the advantages, you know, that the Cavaliers have in this, and that they've got Shumpert and they've got LeBron, and they can throw, you know, whoever the hot hand is, whether it's Clay or whether it's someone else, you know, if Barnes gets hot, suddenly LeBron's on Barnes, and Barnes isn't going to be as hot anymore. They've got some defenders they can throw at guys who are hot. It's an interesting test.
Well, you know, Curry's appeal to the casual fans is basically his relatively slight stature, you know, in NBA terms, right? I mean, he's a smaller guy. He's skinny. You know, he runs around there, dribbles the ball through people, and just throws up these ridiculous long three-pointers that go in at a really high percentage. I think that's what's going to surprise casual fans that haven't maybe watched Curry's closely all season long, is just the high volume of difficult shots that the guy makes on a consistent basis. You know, LeBron James has that huge frame. You know, the guy's, you know, built like a god, and he can just shut people down, you know, as Kurt mentioned, defensively. But I don't think either one of these guys you're going to stop. You're not going to stop LeBron if he wants to go off. You're not going to stop Curry from, you know, dropping 35, 40 points at least once, you know, in these finals. What's going to be the difference, as it always is the other guys. It's who else is going to step up. I like the fact that, you know, the Cavaliers have J.R. Smith off the bench in that, you know, old Vinnie Johnson microwave mode from those old Detroit Pistons teams. Sure. You know, J.R. just comes in and starts lighting it up. But really, for the Cavaliers, it's going to be Kyrie Irving. It's how healthy is he? You know, Kyrie is a 50-point game this season. Klay Thompson is a 50-point game this season for the Warriors. So it's going to be those secondary guys, whether or not they can have big games on the nights when maybe their star players are a little bit less efficient.
Now, you know what? Actually, Brett, you mentioned something that I wanted to ask you guys, which was, is there going to be a 40-point game in this series? Because as good as LeBron and Curry are, and it's possible, these are also two really pretty, like I've been saying, good defensive teams. If Curry gets hot, he's going to see Iman Shumpert and LeBron. If LeBron's going to see Draymond Green, look, it's one thing to get by Damari Carroll and have Al Horford protecting the ring. It's another thing to have Draymond Green draped on you and have Andrew Bogut protecting the ring. Are we going to see a 40-point game this series?
Nah, I mean, no. 30, 35 probably is more realistic. You know, 40, you know, in my opinion, the only way we see a 40-point game is if it's from Curry. I don't think anybody else is capable of lighting it up like that, not even LeBron. You know, even in that big game, the overtime win against the Hawks, in his triple-double performance, he finished with 37. So, you know, LeBron tends to do it more of an all-around game. You know, Curry, the way he gets hot from three, I think it's more likely if somebody drops 40, it's going to be Curry. But you're right. I think we're more likely to see, you know, a high-scoring game somewhere between 30 and 35 points.
I guess it's just the hopeful fan in me that wants somebody to just go crazy and have a big scoring night. I mean, it's definitely – it's not out of the capabilities of four guys on the floor given Kyrie's health, and we'll get into that. But no, you're right. You know, both of you are right in terms of the fact that there's good defensive matchups that both teams have to at least try and slow down the other team's best player. And both teams have been playing well defensively. If you were kind of taking like a betting line, at least for me, I still would probably take LeBron 1, only because I've seen him on the stage before and I trust him a little more, but barely above Steph. Do you think it's fair to call it as close to a wash as we possibly can between the two? Like they could cancel each other out as far as how well they're going to play on this stage?
Maybe, but I think the Cavaliers need LeBron more than Golden State needs Curry, if that makes sense. I mean, not that Golden State doesn't need Curry, but they do have the depth. They do have other things they can throw. I mean, you know, we were looking up stats the other day for this, you know, and I was trying to look up stuff for the finals. LeBron's isolations are up to, I think it was 16 or 18% of his shots now in the finals, which was up from, you know, 13% in the regular season. And they're just going to him more in isolation. They're relying on him. And that's a function of A, matchups, and B, just, you know, again, no, like we said, no Kevin Love. Kyrie Irving missed some games, was, you know, dragging that peg leg around for some games. They had to. But I think if you do a lot of isolation basketball against Golden State, it's going to be trouble for you.
Yeah, that's kind of why, because I think we all agree that LeBron is the best player, but because Cleveland needs him, I guess, to play at a certain level more than Golden State needs Steph to, you know, that's kind of a simplistic way of looking at it. But because of that, that's why it's kind of closer to a wash than it may seem. What do you think, Brett?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's going to come down to the team effort. You know, like you said, we're fortunate that we get the two best players in the game right now in this finals matchup, but it's going to be a team effort. It's going to be the secondary players that decide the series.
For sure. And two of those players, I think, is one of the most interesting matchups in the whole series. At the four spot, Draymond going up against Tristan Thompson. And when I look at that matchup, immediately you think, at least for me, you think right away that Draymond may have the upper hand because of the versatility he brings. But at least when Cleveland is on the offensive side of the ball, I don't see Tristan Thompson as a player that you guard in the traditional sense. You know what I mean? Like, if you look at the three rounds that it took Golden State to get here, you had a player like Anthony Davis who you needed Draymond to guard in the traditional sense. The same thing with Zach Randolph. You even saw Draymond have to guard Dwight and Josh Smith throughout the Rockets series. But when you watch Tristan Thompson play, specifically on offense, he just hangs on that baseline and waits for that shot to go up, and he basically just counts on beating you to the boards. And you don't guard that in the traditional sense. So I kind of feel like that could give Tristan Thompson the upper hand on that side of the ball and maybe cause some problems for what the Golden State Warriors want to do defensively.
I don't know. I think what you're going to see is a switch there. I think you're going to see Draymond go to LeBron, and you're going to see, and we'll, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. But I think you're going to see Draymond on LeBron and Barnes get shifted over to kind of deal with Thompson and hide Barnes a little bit, even though he's a good defender. I mean, they switched to, you know, he had Harden responsibilities at the end of the last series, right? But I don't think he's going to start there with LeBron this series. So I think that's, again, we're back to the versatility of Golden State. They can throw different looks at him, but you're right. He's a little different. I will add this, though. I think the Tristan Thompson, Timofey Mozgov front line is an interesting test for Golden State. And if, you know, your instant reaction is, well, look, they already had to deal with Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol, which is a better front line from Memphis, and it gave them a little trouble. Yes, but Memphis had no shooting. Like, you could pack it in on that. You know who's going to get the points on that team. And if the other guys are getting open from three, you're kind of like, all right, well, let's see what happens. That you can't do that with Cleveland. They do have guys, you know, J.R. Smith, you'll get the ball wide open, then dribble into the contested shot, but he's still gonna knock down his threes. You know, Dellavedova's been knocking down threes. Other guys have too. I mean, there is shooting on that team, so you can't pack it in the same way. So it's gonna be, they're gonna have to defend that a little more one on one.
Well, Tristan Thompson's, you know, sort of non-traditional offense, like you mentioned, Dom, that's a huge advantage for the Cavaliers, and that's why they've been so tough since Kevin Love went out with that injury. You know, Kevin Love drifts to the 3-point line. You know, he's looking for his offense. Tristan Thompson isn't looking for his offense. The only offense you're going to see out of Tristan Thompson, you might see an occasional mid-range jumper if he's left wide, wide open. But for the most part, he's going to be rolling to the basket looking for alley-oops on drives, or he's going to be, as you mentioned, you know, roaming the baseline, hanging around the paint, trying to get those rebounds. And I think that's a big advantage for the Cavaliers. You know, Kurt, you mentioned Mozgov. He's an interesting case, especially in this series, because he's only been playing for the most part in the playoffs 22, 24 minutes a game. He doesn't play, you know, the bulk of the minutes. And I think part of the reason for that is because LeBron James, his shooting percentage dips with Mozgov on the floor. And I think it's fairly easy to see why. Mozgov can't shoot. If he's drawn outside the paint to try to open up some space for LeBron, whoever's guarding Mozgov is just going to cheat off him, double-team LeBron on those drives and make his shots much more difficult. Mozgov, outside of the restricted area in the playoffs, is shooting just 7 of 32 from the field. So you can expect that to continue. No one's going to guard him if he tries to move out of the lane to make some space for LeBron, and I think that makes it interesting to see just how many minutes he's going to get, you know, in this final series against the Warriors.
Yeah, that's one of the advantages Tristan Thompson has really given them this series, that they can play him at the five and through the playoffs. I mean, his emergence, they can play Tristan at the five and then move that LeBron guy to the four. He's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Dude,
for sure.
You mentioned Tristan at the five. So the Cavaliers' second most used lineup in the playoffs, which is, you know, 50 minutes in eight games, has a net rating of plus 29.2 points per 100 possessions, and that's with Tristan Thompson at the five. That's with Dellavedova, LeBron, Shumpert, and JR on the floor. So you're absolutely right. Huge advantage when the Cavaliers go to that lineup.
It's going to be, again, but this is, and then now we're back to the Warriors discussion. They have the versatility to match that in a way because they're like, you want to put Tristan at the five? We'll put Draymond at the five, and let's go. And that becomes an interesting series. You know, it's going to be an interesting chess match that way.
For sure. I actually disagree somewhat. I think that we're going to see, and we'll find this out Thursday night, I think we're going to see Barnes get the first crack at LeBron. Because I think they're going to be, because obviously they watched that Cavs-Bulls series, and they saw how much Tristan Thompson affected those games just with his offensive rebounding alone. And I think they're going to want to try and limit that as much as possible. And I don't think Barnes can do as good a job as Draymond could blocking him out. But it'll float. It'll change. Obviously, those are fluid things. I expect to see Draymond on LeBron a lot as well. I think they're going to start off with Draymond on Tristan Thompson and then kind of go from there.
Yeah, well, the other thing that Tristan Thompson offensive rebounding does that could be huge this series and why he's honestly pretty key in that for them, you can't let the Warriors get out and run. And if you're a threat on the offensive glass and guys have to stay back and deal with that, it's, you know, you slow down a running game. So I think that on that count, keeping track of him, it really matters because Golden State can't get those mismatched transition baskets if they don't have the ball, you know, right off the miss.
Absolutely. That's a great point. How much do you anticipate both teams downsizing? Do you think we'll see those as the primary lineups with something with like Draymond at the five and Tristan Thompson at the five?
Both of those teams like to do it, so it's going to be a fascinating matchup. But I think, look, you know, Nate Duncan, who's a really smart basketball writer and a guy who goes to Golden State games, refers to that lineup as the break the glass of in case of emergency lineup. Like, yeah, when anything goes wrong, they just go to Draymond at the five. But I think you're going to see it a lot more just because I think both of those teams will do both of those teams like that lineup.
Yeah, we're going to see, obviously, a bunch of lineups.
For sure. The versatility on both sides.
They're going to try everything and anything because it's the finals. It's the championship round. So you'll see a lot of experimentation. But, again, these teams got here playing a certain style, and I think we're going to primarily see what we've been seeing from these guys throughout the postseason.
Yeah, the versatility on both sides is great, especially on the wings. I think it's going to be awesome. But the one thing I will say is that in the finals, like, and it starts with the postseason in general, the further along you go, and I guess as the games get more intense, the shorter the leashes become and the shorter the rotations become. And, you know, I don't know, we can get into our predictions later, but when series start to extend and they start to get long and you get into 6 and 7 games, they become real short. And the guys that you trust are the guys that end up playing the 42, the 44-minute games. So, you know, both teams got a ton of versatility, but I also think that depending on the series that we get, if things start to get really tight and it's a tight series going 6-7 games, I think the rotations will eventually shorten somewhat. But, you know, that remains to be seen. Another matchup I think is pretty interesting, and you hear the term all the time, the heat check guys, the guys that come in and just light it up. The basket's like an ocean to them. And for me, I think the two guys that fit that bill for both teams is Klay Thompson and J.R. Smith. And I don't mean to minimize Klay's impact by calling him a heat check guy, but when I watch him on offense, I feel like he floats in and out. Like, he'll go stretches where he doesn't really score, and then he'll have an 8-point barrage in 4 possessions. And we've seen what J.R. can do. He hit their games where he hit 7-8 threes at a time, and he can win a game by himself. So I guess what it comes down to is we know Cleveland can win if JR doesn't have those big nights, but it's so obvious when Klay's shooting is off how much it holds that team back.
I kind of agree. I think that Klay is more important in a sense to what Golden State does. They need him to have, if he has a really off night, it does slow their offense down. That said, J.R. Smith is the quintessential hot guy, and I think for the Cavs to win the series, they can't just get one of those crazy games out of him. They're going to need 2 or 3, where, you know, he is the, and this is why he was the worst matchup on the face of the earth next, you know, playing next to Carmelo Anthony. He is the one of the best bad shot makers when he's on that this game has. I mean, it doesn't matter how contested you are. It doesn't matter how much you go. You should not take that. Once he gets rolling, he's the walking proof of the hot hand theory. Just like when it opens up for him, you know, it's ridiculous. They're going to need a couple of those games from him because, I think you can. I don't want to say minimize LeBron because LeBron's going to be LeBron, but you can. This is a team that will be able to counter him as much as anybody can counter him, and they're going to need other guys to step up. And JR is at the front of that list. He and Kyrie Irving, obviously. They're going to need a couple of games from him where he's just nuts, where Golden State, I think, will get what they need out of Clay over the course of the series.
Yeah, I mean, Clay's a guy that you mentioned he sort of doesn't always have involvement on every single possession, and that's because Stephen Curry's handling the ball. So when Curry does pass to Clay, and when he finds Clay in rhythm, those shots go up. I mean, Clay doesn't pass it back. You know, if you watch a lot of Warriors games, Clay's not a high assist guy. Clay's a guy that is going to shoot it when he gets it because he doesn't get it all the time.
Yeah, his shots.
Look, I think we're looking for consistency out of everybody outside of the stars or the starting five, right? So if JR can just be consistent, just shoot a normal percentage, 40-50% from the field, you know, knock down some threes, that's going to be huge. And same with Clay. You know, if he gets those open shots, he needs to knock them down when the opportunities present themselves. So that's pretty much what we're looking at. We're looking from out of each of these guys and out of each of these teams.
Let me ask you guys, though, this. And Brett, I'll start with you. If you're Cleveland, how do you match up defensively? I mean, who do you put where? And you know, how do you attack that defensively? I mean, I think it's interesting. It really comes down to how healthy is Kyrie Irving, which I think we'll get to. But, like, how do you match him up?
I mean, for me, I'm not putting Kyrie Irving on Steph Curry. There's no way, not especially if his knee isn't 100%. You know, it's going to be a team defensive effort. I would like to start, you know, maybe Shumpert, you know, on Curry and kind of see how that plays out. You know, hide, quote-unquote, hide Kyrie on Klay Thompson for a little bit. But, you know, it's going to be a team effort. You know, we've already, you know, kind of went over this a little bit, but we're going to see a lot of different matchups. LeBron will check Curry at some point in this series. Just go ahead and write it down right now. Mm-hmm. Definitely going to happen. You know, and they're going to try their luck, you know, with different players and different lineups and different combinations. But, guys, we know that the team defensive scheme is what's important here because Curry's good enough, just like LeBron's good enough, to beat their man off the dribble and get into the teeth of the defense. What happens from there is what's going to determine what happens in this series. You know, how they collapse, do they make them, you know, kick out to an open shooter? Are the rotations going to be fast enough and fluid enough, you know, to sort of contest those potentially open shots? That's what it's going to come down to in this series. It's all about team defense, no matter what the initial matchups look like.
Definitely. And I think you're both right in the sense that they've got to try to, as far, it's about the team concepts, but when you look at the individual matchups, I think you got to try and hide Kyrie somewhere just because we don't know how healthy he is or how healthy he will be. I also think the matchups from on an individual basis, from the Warriors side is pretty interesting because do you ever take the risk and use, because it's often said that Klay Thompson is their best perimeter defender. I don't know if you consider Draymond Green their best perimeter defender, but we saw what it does to him when he has to check a guy like a James Harden. Like I felt like it really wore on his offense. And when they finally moved him off of Harden for games 4 and 5, his offense started to come. Do you think that we'll ever see Thompson maybe check Kyrie or maybe even try his hand at LeBron?
I think he'll check Kyrie. LeBron, yeah, probably, again, like Brett said, you're going to see they're going to try a little bit of everything and he's going to get some moments on him. I don't know about extended minutes, but he'll get some time on him. But I think mostly you're going to hide him up Kyrie. And by the way, if Kyrie is on Klay Thompson, I will tell you, if I'm Steve Kerr, I just turned Klay Thompson into J.J. Redick / you know, Ray Allen. I'm going to run him off 47 picks.
Yeah,
I'm going to see what kind of legs Kyrie has.
I would even consider putting him in the post and trying that. using his size advantage.
That's the other thing you always forget about Clay. Clay's what? I'd have to look up the official now. I want to say 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah, he's listed 6'7". He's listed 6'7", 215. We've been kind of dancing around this issue a little bit because it's so prevalent for the series. But Kyrie Irving, what we're going to see out of him and how healthy he is, because it's been pretty much two full series he's been hurt. I think the reports were he got hurt in the Boston series and he didn't look that good playing against the Hawks. They obviously had him on a minutes restriction when he came back. But you know, your mind moves so quickly when you're watching the postseason and then these playoff runs, it's easy to forget how good that guy can be when he's actually fully healthy. What kind of impact do you guys see him having if he is fully healthy?
I think Kyrie Irving is fantastic, man. I'm a big fan of his game. You know, he's one of those rare players that can take over for stretches and just be, you know, on a completely different level. You know, I think if he's healthy, if he's close to 90-95%, you know, he's a huge factor in the series. And, you know, we'll get to predictions later, but I mean, you know, spoiler alert, I'm going to take the Cavaliers to win the series once we get into it. But Kyrie Irving is going to need to be healthy for that to happen. You know, the time off, I think, is going to be huge in getting him right or as close to right as he can be for this finals matchup. But, you know, he's a special player, guys. And if he's healthy alongside, you know, what we've already all said, that LeBron James is the best player in the world, emergence of Tristan Thompson, you know, I like the Cavaliers' chances here.
You know what would be fun? What would be one of the most fun things about this series if we get, you know, a Kyrie close to vintage Kyrie? I think you've got two of the four best ball handlers in the game in Kyrie Irving and Steph Curry. I mean, there'd be some crossovers, some dribbling that would be just fantastic. Those guys are so much fun with the ball in their hands. You know, that would be a really entertaining show. We'll see with Kyrie though. Here's my concern, and it's not just my concern. This has been voiced in, you know, plenty of other media and other reports around the league. They had almost a week off before the last series. He played limpingly in game one, you know, that first game, and then sat out for a while, and then came back in game four and still moved better, but still wasn't himself. If this is knee tendonitis, that's all this time off should really help him. My concern is, honestly, is there something more? Is it worse just because he's not showing the improvement I was hoping to see with the amount of time off? But hopefully for us as fans and just, you know, people who are going to be watching all these games, we get that Kyrie, because that Kyrie makes us, like Brett said, that makes it a far more interesting series if he's that Kyrie. Plus, it's just the entertainment value goes up. That guy is fun to watch. He's still really valuable for them, Joe, just because, even limpingly, and like he did it that last game against the Hawks, the guy can shoot the rock, man.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, we're all so infatuated with Steph Curry shooting and deservedly so, but that guy is quickly climbing up the ladder as far as best shooters ever. But you know, talking about the Kyrie Irving Steph Curry matchup, Kyrie Irving can shoot it, like you said. I watched that 55 or 57 point game against the Spurs, and like you said, he's got that handle and he can get to the rim. But that guy can stroke it. He shot 41.5% from three this season. I think that's another thing that might be that could kind of rear its head in this series, is not only how good of a player he is at the rim, but how good of a shooter he is. We could see some good back and forth between him, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson as far as outside shooting.
Yeah, I think if he gets hot, it becomes a much more difficult defensive challenge for Golden State. Like now you've got to deal with him and put Klay on him, put whoever on him. But it becomes a challenge because he is elite when he's playing like that. And by the way, remember, he did win the three-point contest one year.
All right, so game one, guys, is Thursday night. Who do you think is going to take game one, and how do you see this series turning out?
You know, as somebody who has to travel to this, I'm very excited to be in San Francisco for a few days because, like, nothing against San Antonio, which is a fun city, but I'm like, this is good for me. I'm taking Golden State in six. Honestly, I was leaning five at first, and it wasn't until I really started looking at the matchups a little bit that I gave the Cavaliers another game. I think that, like we've said, the matchups are key. Kyrie Irving is key, but I'm going to take Golden State in six, so I will take Golden State in game one. But I think we're I think there are a lot of interesting questions, and we start to get answers in game one. I think it's going to be one of the more interesting chess matchups that we've seen in the finals in years.
Well, first of all, Kurt, I don't know if you're aware, but Oracle Arena is in Oakland.
Yes, I am, but I'm not even sure that's where we're I know where I'm going out.
And I know
how close the Marriott is to their practice facility. I'm very good with that, thanks.
And for the record, I can't stand San Francisco as a city. It's hilly, it's windy as heck, you know, because I can't cuss on this podcast. I can't stand
You live in New Jersey. It's too cold for you?
I can't stay in New Jersey either. You know? okay, so putting all that stuff aside here, game one is going to be interesting. You know, the two teams are going to obviously be feeling each other out. You know, I don't know who's going to win game one, but I'm taking the Cavaliers in this series for the reasons that we discussed earlier when we started this thing off. I really like the way that this Cleveland team has come together with the lineups that they're currently using. I like Tristan Thompson and Iman Shumpert in the starting lineup. You know, we haven't even mentioned Matthew Dellavedova, who's become a huge factor for the Cavaliers in these playoffs. Forget about the questionable, quote-unquote, dirty plays that he's been involved in. You know, every lineup with him in it, you know, is huge from a net rating standpoint for the Cavaliers. So, you know, he's been a nice factor. I just like the lineups and the rotations and the way this Cavaliers team has come together recently. I know the Warriors have been the best team in the league all season long. They get it done on both ends of the floor. But I like the Cavaliers to win this series. I like the Cavaliers to get one of the two games in Oakland. I'm not sure if that's going to be game one or game two, but go ahead and give me the Cavaliers to win this series.
I think I'm picking the Warriors in six, and I think that you mentioned, Brett, they were the best team all season. I kind of trust, or I kind of have more faith in the road that they took to get here. It was tougher. I think it was a little more tested. I think they went up against some teams that were actually a little more competitive. I just saw the Cavs. I felt like they breezed through a little easier than the Warriors did. I trust the Warriors' depth a little more. I think they've got, you know, like you said, you talked about Dellavedova. Well, you've got guys like Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala coming off the bench for the Warriors, who are proven guys who I think have had underrated postseason runs, mainly because they aren't asked to do a lot, but they star in the roles that they have. I trust the outside shooting of Golden State a little more, and I think the Warriors have more guys to try and throw at LeBron than the Cavs have guys to throw at Steph, which I think will have a huge impact. And I expect Golden State to take game one. I think they're going to come out fast, and I think I could see a blowout. I'm not predicting it, but it wouldn't shock me if we see Golden State win in convincing fashion in game one.
You know what I fear in game one, guys, to be honest? Rust. Like, it's been such a long break that I honestly think the first quarter is going to be sloppy.
As far as predicting the Warriors in a potential blowout, I mean, you know, if they win, a blowout is somewhat likely, right? I mean, that's what they've been doing.
That's what they do.
To team.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off, Brett. Yeah, no, but you're right. That's a great point. When they win at Oracle, they tend to win big, you know? And I could see them, you know, like I'm saying, I'm not predicting it, but I could see them getting on a roll and kind of letting that snowball effect happen in Oracle where they come out with a convincing win. All right, well, thanks, guys, for joining. I think I speak for all of us. We're super excited for this finals. You know, I think we've got two of the best players in the league, two of the best teams in the league. There's legacy head storylines. Both teams are looking to bring championships to organizations that haven't won them in a long time. So it's going to be great. Look for another PBT podcast down the line later this week. And Brett and Kurt, why don't you throw everybody your Twitter handle so they can find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Basketball Talk. I'm Kurt.
Yeah, and I'm on Twitter at Brett EP.
All right, guys. And I'm at DL Riddy on Twitter. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And see you next time.